Blog Talk Radio.
Nalema kulila misozi, nikayanga na banja latu, kupadwa tinabadwa mushe, koma lelo lipazulika. Nikale tinakalapo kondwela, lelo heka, tutikumbukila kweta chokela. Amai kuvutika mutima, koma zoti tazisoa, nimaona misozi masomu wake. Ni mafuto wabale ni mafuto. Kumwanako kuipirendi kuchitoko na mumufolo hamama inei.
Good morning from Dallas, Texas, and welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio. November 5th, I believe, 2016, 3 days away from one of the most highly contested and worst campaign period in the history of the United States, I must say. And this has just been something else, and there are a lot of stuff going on, a lot of things being said. So what we thought that we'll do today, when you listen to the candidates, we're talking about Mr. Donald Trump and Secretary Hillary Clinton, is that the vote, or the minority vote, is what is going to decide this election in one way or another. That is also my conviction, actually, although a lot of people think that the millennials, well, that's also another argument that one can put across. But basically today we're going to look at the minority vote. When I say minority, we're going to look at the African-American, the Latinos and the Asians and all those that form part of the demographic structure of the American society and the electorate, if you want us to use that word. So this morning I invited some friends. I reached out to different friends in our culture who are friends and part of this show, radio show, to try and look and examine that aspect of the so-called minority vote, and see where this election is going to go. Is going to go rather, and look at a lot of other things and stuff like that. Matilda, I just want you to know that our two friends from Florida haven't still called in. I just want you to know. As I'm talking here, I want us to begin at the same point, all of us, and just take off on the same page. So that is going to be our discussion this morning. And one of the things that keep rising up, Roger, let me engage you in this one-on-one conversation before I introduce our guests. I've seen my good friend, Dr. Davenport Jones, has called in, and I see Pianki is here. I'm waiting for two other people that are invited to call in, because I want us to begin at the same time. This thing called, what's the word? Likeability. I don't know. You keep hearing this word coming up, Roger, all the time, where people keep saying that both candidates are bad. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Before I bring in Kimberly, Kitra, and Pianki to begin to discuss our topic for today, I just want you to give me your thoughts on that, about you keep hearing this expression, the lesser evil, and I don't know how you have dealt with that, Roger.
it's been
One, it's been surprising when people talk about the Clintons or Mrs. Hillary Clinton, that she's not likable, stuff like that. Okay, let mm-hmm. me refer to our own scenario back home in Zambia. We had President Chiluba. He was yes. charismatic. He made us feel good when he talked. He made us feel good. He made us want to do everything he was telling us to do, he wanted to do. Then we have a current leader. He is not charismatic. You just want to shut down the radio when you listen to them. We flip the coin to the United States. When Obama is speaking on TV, I have mm-hmm. to stop everything I'm doing. I have to rush stop. What is he talking about? I want to listen because he says not only things I like, but he says it in a way which motivates me, which makes me want to do something. Flip the coin. Hillary Clinton, when you hear her speak, if you are closing your eyes, even when you are looking at her, she does not do that. So that is the likability you see. Do you want to follow this person? What are they saying which wants me to follow them? You know, flip the coin again to the husband, Bill Clinton, when he was in firm, not now when he's old. When he explained something, you wanted to be part of his vision. So I think this likability stuff, when it comes, it only entails that mm-hmm. this other person, whatever they say, whatever they are doing, it does not make me want to follow them.
Mm. Interesting. It is said America, what goes on in America influences the world or is has a ripple effect to the world community, politically, economically, in terms of military, family values, and everything else. And America is composed of, that you can find, I don't think I'll be exaggerating if I said you can literally find any race in this country. And we are going to learn from our friends that have invited. We need to get to the bottom of this thing. I keep hearing that it was the Republican Party that freed the black slaves. And where did things change? There are a lot of things to look at here. The phrase minority, where did it come from? How did it start? I decided to invite some friends here. One of our guests for this panel is a regular contributor, a friend, an adopted Zambian, Mr. Pianki. Mr. Pianki, thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nathan. It always feels good to be in the company of friends.
Exactly right. And another good friend, special lady, I went to school with her. The Lord connected us in a very special way. She's brilliant. I like the way she thinks, outgoing. Miss Kitra Davenport-Jones. Hi, Kitra. It's been a while.
Yes. How are you, Pastor, and to the other panel speakers? I'm just counted a privilege to be in the midst of this discussion this morning, and it's King, actually. It's Davenport King, and yeah, I'm just looking forward to just delving into this very, very pressing issue that our world is facing. And in 3 days, we'll be making a major decision.
Excellent. Thanks, I'm looking forward to your contribution. And another special lady, whom I was introduced to by Matilda, joining us, Ms. Kimberly Jones. Ms. Kim, good morning and welcome to Zambia Block Talk Radio.
Hello, good morning. I'm excited to be here. I can't wait for the conversation.
Yes, we're about to get underway. And our final guest also joining the conversation is, I need to ask whether she's also calling in from Florida, Ms. Carrie Boone. Ms. Boone, good morning. Carrie, can you hear me? Okay, when she gets attention of that. Well, this is the way I want us to do this, Kitra, Pianki, and Ms. Kim, if you don't mind me calling you that way. And you can all just come in as I throw things at And then also joining us are the regular contributors, Roger, whom you heard speak. I'm also glad to have Kelvin here with me, Rajisebwe, everybody, Dr. Kalonde, Matilda, as always. Ms. Kim, you and I, when we spoke briefly yesterday, we talked about this shift of the Black community, the African-American community, having shifted its allegiance from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party. Can you please educate us how that happened? What led to that? What were the circumstances?
Sure. So you're most likely talking about the Civil War and when the Republicans, they always call themselves the Party of Lincoln because they actually were the party that was heavily fighting during the Civil War to have the emancipation of the slaves. And so they were responsible for that emancipation. They were also responsible for fighting on behalf of the slaves. And so it wasn't actually until we entered into the civil rights reign or civil rights regime where African Americans were changing their party allegiances because the Democratic Party under Lyndon B. Johnson was the party that really was fighting. Well, I won't say fighting. They were responsible for many of the voting rights strategies. They were responsible for many of the rights related to the Jim Crow and all of those things that in the South many Black Americans found themselves facing. So when the party shifted, it was because of people like Martin Luther King that was out there fighting on behalf of African Americans. And so you saw a major shift when African Americans went to the voting polls because they were now fighting the Jim Crow laws. They were fighting in the South to be able to have their right to vote. I also sent to your listening audience some of the documentation with regards to how voter suppression happened in many of the southern states and how there was a lot of voter intimidation in the southern states, and most of those individuals were fighting on behalf of the Republican Party. So you saw a major shift during that time.
Okay. Bianchi, you may contribute whichever way you want to come in based on what Ms. Kim has said, but my point to you, Bianchi, is where did the Republicans lose it? What happened?
Well, actually, the blacks started going toward away from the Republicans in about 1935, 1936. Before that, you know, it was, if you look at the party allegiance who helped put into effect civil rights acts that was passed in 1866, the Ku Klux Klan Act, which prohibited extant violence against black in 1871, 1875, you had the equal transportation. Then you came up into the modern time, 1957, you had established a civil rights commission. You had a civil rights act in 1957, which, by the way, that Kennedy was against, then working your way up into 1964. Blacks always had the right to vote. What it was is that it was not enforced in the southern states. And at the end of any amendment, like the 14th Amendment, for instance, it gives Congress the power to put acts into effect in order for the intent of the amendment to come into fruition. So blacks moved away from the Republican Party when their concerns was not being addressed. One particular concern was lynching. Republicans have always received about 22, 28, 30% of the black vote, the blacks that vote in their election. You've seen that with Richard Nixon. You've seen that with Eisenhower. And, well, those are the two of most recent times. So that's where we are today, basically.
Okay. Fast forward into the civil rights movement, Kitra. If you want to comment on what on the historical thing we've discussed, you can do that. Fast forward into the into the civil rights movement when things were tense. There was a lot of violence and all the things that happened. Can you help us understand that transition and what led to the? At what stage were the black people legally allowed to vote?
Well, I believe that when you look at the 13th Amendment, when it came into play, when we shifted from the slavery, when we shifted from the need, I guess the law that it couldn't oppress slaves or African-American people or black people, should I say, in a way of chains and bonds, then in the 13th Amendment, it had that very subliminal message that states that if you submit a crime, that you could be held, in hostage and whatever comes with that. But my thing is that when you came into the civil rights movement, that was the struggle, that was the fight, because they really didn't understand is that what can we do, because now we cannot legally hold slaves in place. We cannot legally keep African Americans from going to the polls and voting. Now we got to find another way, and that's when imprisonment and the prison war began. The bondage of putting black people into prison. So now you have this generations of decades, 10-year, 20-year, 30-year of enslavement in the prison system, where we were not when we came out of prison as black people. Now you can't vote because now you have a felony. Now you have these strikes against you to keep you from the polls, which to me, being in this generation in my mid-40s and coming up through the 70s and the 80s, where I now understand that the reason why our prison system is so at 2.3 million African-American men right now and women is because now we're trying to keep this population out of the polls to vote, to foundationally make a difference in our world. In addition to that, now you ask the question, why is it that black people are not showing up at the polls right now? It's because I feel like there's no motivation. I don't think the motivation should be based on the color of our skin. It should be based on whether we looking truly to the depths and the foundation of our children, of our local needs. And yes, it's been the argument about, do the Democratic Party really affect African-American communities? Yeah, I think so. I think President Obama did a great job to what he could based on what he had to deal with in his tenure. I believe that we have a lot of more struggles and a lot of more fights to push forward. And I guess my input would be is that we need to revisit the 13th Amendment before we can move to the 14th Amendment and the 15th Amendment.
Kendra, you've raised some things. Maybe let me just jump into it right now. I just wanted us to get a historical background, because I know a lot of people don't understand when the Republicans claim that they are the ones who liberated the blacks in courts and courts. And why are they in the Democratic corner now? I just wanted us to understand, you have used the expression, Kitra, there's lack of motivation. Why, Ms. Kim, is there no lack of motivation in the black community? And you keep hearing this, Hillary needs to stomp on, I'm just mentioning her name, everybody's stomping to get the black people to, why is there no motivation, Ms. Kim?
I think there's a combination of things, I think there's a combination of things. I think you enter into, we're in a new century where there's so many other things that divide our attention, and we have so much access to information, so much access to new ideas and innovations and all of these things. And I think for this generation, it isn't pressing. There isn't that level of need where people feel like they have to be involved, they have to be engaged. And when you have a generation of people where you have more people voting for an American Idol than you have for the presidency, it quite frankly isn't as sexy as what people have access to. And now, you can tune in to whatever you want to on your computer, onto your phone, and you don't have to watch, the presidential election. You don't have to be tuned into what's happening in politics. And quite frankly, you have a generation of people that aren't connected, and they don't really care about what's happening in the presidency until it impacts them personally. So when you see things like Black Lives Matter movements, and when you see things like, the shootings in our communities, and still, you still have a generation of people that it doesn't affect, because they can turn the TV. They don't have to watch it anymore. They have access to being able to determine what news feeds they want to listen to and what makes sense to them.
Bianchi, you want to come in?
Well, Bianchi, this is...
Yeah. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay.
Is that Kitra? Uh-huh.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of piggy off of Miss Kim. I concur with you. Is that because this generation, the millennials, is that you're right. They have the capability to access and not access the information that they want to obtain any at any given time that they want to attain it. And I believe the problem is that they're disconnected because they not have been enriched to really understand the fullness of their history and their culture. And that is really what is affecting the drive, that if the presidential candidate is not saying exactly what they want to hear based on their generation, based on the world they're growing into, it is impacting their turnout. They want to hear that, hey, I can go and become the next president of IBM just by knowing this job, knowing this position more than my colleague, and then I'm able to just work harder in school. But they really have lost the essence of understanding who they are as people, and I believe that that's impacting too.
Let me add on, Nathan. This is Roger here in Canada. Mm. When Obama was elected as president, first as black people, we are always looked at as last. Everyone, every minority group, even the Chinese, they mention who, which kind of race, they all look at black people as being last. When we elected the first black leader to lead the nation, I went in the supermarket here in Canada, and I was walking with my shoulders up high, you know, showing off. Even when I walked slowly, I was telling them, "See, black man can do it. Black man can do it." We could see ourselves. We could see a reflection in Obama in ourselves. So that was motivation enough, Nathan. To push me, to push you, to push Kim and everyone here to go to the polls. So people relating that, oh, the minorities are not going to vote now for Hillary, I'm not sure what they are thinking, if this race issue can even be compared to. The next thing now is politics. Are the politics working for me? We have Black Lives Matter. Black people, the high rate of unemployment, it is the highest. Our schools, I look at what people went to in Michigan because of water thing. Now give me a reason why I should go and vote, considering things we have gone through. So it requires experienced leaders like Bianchi. We have leaders here who have seen the West. The millennials, all they see is the dysfunction they go through every day. So someone has to provide some kind of reason why they should go and vote.
You see, Roger, let me throw this to our panelists here, Kitra, Ms. Kim, and Ms. Kerry, can you hear me? I don't know. I can see your line, your number. I don't know whether you are able to hear me. Please, I would like you also to contribute here. Here is the argument. Pianki, Kim, Kitra, any one of you can respond to this. The black vote has been taken for granted for years. I want you to respond to that statement. What does that mean?
Okay, so this is Kim, and I don't necessarily agree that it's been taken advantage, or you know, that people just believe it's going to automatically be Democratic. So let's enter into the Obama age, the reason why his presidential election was different, and how he really utilized social media. So when you think about how he actually did it, it was a lot of ground game. I lived in Iowa during the time when the election was happening for President Obama. But prior to the time where Obama was going to announce that he was running, he actually spent quite a bit of time in Iowa, where, as you know, Iowa is usually one of those states that it determines what's going to happen in the election. And right away, his ground game was extremely strong. Not only was he in the communities and meeting with local government officials and meeting with local community groups. But he actually was an advocate. I mean, he was out and he was pushing the agenda for, you know, getting black people out to vote, working with the disenfranchised. That was his original role, was he was in Chicago on the streets motivating and moving people. So his ground game was very different than what, you know, what people had experienced before. He also used social media in a way that had not never been used before. So now we're seeing a lot more social media engagement than we've had in previous elections. But that was because of the Obama administration. That was a team of people that were in, you know, little houses and trailers in Iowa where they were really getting the vote out. They were knocking on doors. They were communicating with those people that probably hadn't voted in years prior to, you know, the Bush administration. These were people that, you know, had an opportunity to kind of see that, hey, this guy is different. He's got people in our communities actually talking about what's important to them. So I don't think it was so much that they've taken for granted the vote. I think that when you saw the Obama administration, and this is just in my opinion, because I lived in Iowa prior to his actual announcement of his run, he really spent some time in our communities talking about what made sense for us and why we needed to vote and the importance of getting out to vote. So now, you know, when you're seeing the social media outreach, that was a result of what happened during the Obama administration, what he did in his local ground game to push people out of their seats and say, hey, this is important and this is why this is important.
Okay. So well, in other words, I don't – go ahead, Bianca, go ahead.
Iowa is not a reflection of what black America is. Blacks came out in 2008 and voted for Obama the way they did because of simple reason, because he was black. Women would come out and vote for Hillary because she's a female. Democrats in this election cycle is not spending money to get blacks to come out and vote for them, except for a couple of states. Here in Missouri, you don't see no Hillary Clinton signs on yards like we seen during Obama, because they know that blacks are going to come out and vote for them. That's a surety. Yes, their votes are taken for granted, and it's by way of how you go about measuring. If you can measure an appreciable – well, one thing, what was your agenda that you were going to give either Hillary or Obama for your support of the Democratic Party? We use politics the wrong way, not only blacks and anybody, but politics should be driven by people behind them. If Nathan is good at something and we're in association, we need to have some things critiqued in, at a political level, then we elect him, we fund him, elect him, and send him off to get that done. The Koreans done that very well in New York. They was having competition from the street vendors who was selling the same things that they were selling in their stores. So they formed a Korean association, put their money together, and bought Dinkins, which was a black mayor. Next thing you know, you had police coming down the street on horseback, running the vendors off. So politics are used in a haphazard way within this particular ethnic group we were talking about, the black Americans.
Kitra, you want to respond to that? Ms. Kitra?
I'm sorry, I had you on mute. I didn't want to interfere. No, I agree with, you know, to that accord is that I the question that came to my mind as I listened to both of my counter colleagues is that essentially the bottom line is why we're not going to the polls. And I know we can for the greater discussion go back to understand why in Missouri, because I live in Texas. I live in a Republican state. I live in a rural city in Texas currently. I'm in Vernon, Texas, where everybody in this city is Republican. And we drive down the street, it's Trump everywhere, either here or Wichita Falls. And so I'm, in my mind, because I was born and raised in Dallas, Texas, where you could find a little bit more diversity, and I come to this city now that it's not even an option to where now the, even the African-American people have somewhere became very inferior to the superior fixture is that if I don't swing to the party, the Republican Party, then I can't be accepted or fit in to the culture that's where I am. So I believe that. I have promoted voting. I have promoted against my race of people particularly is that we need to go to the vote, whether it is President Obama, that or whether it is another African-American candidate, is for the legitimacy of America, is that we have to be not partial but impartial to our movement and our vote. And I think that's the struggle. Why are we going and why are we down right now in some cities at 14%, whereas in 2012 we was at 42%, 63%.
Hmm.
So I think that those are valid reasons. And
do you think, Kitra, to Pianki's point and Ms. Kim's point, where she ably put it, she ably made us understand what Obama did before he even went on a platform and said he was going to run for president of the United States. Do you think the Hillary campaign is taking the black community for granted, that she will just show up on a huge campaign and expect the people to vote for her? She hasn't done a groundwork like Obama did in 2008.
Well, I agree with that. I believe that President Obama did set some grassroots, and that may be because there was a relatable measure between him and the African-American people. So he knew where to target and where to go. When you look at the difference between him and Hillary may took for granted that she could ride on the coattail of President Obama and the African-American voters would just come out and they'd just vote for her, and she didn't have to work as hard in pressing in those communities. And when you think of our culture of people, we're driven mentally. So therefore, if we don't see you, we don't know if you really care about us, period. So although, yeah, you're a Democratic, you work with President Obama, we understand that, but have we seen you tangibly in our community, whereas that's what President Obama did? He mastered that. Even when you watch him now on a campaign, he masters that. He masters connecting with those people, us.
And you know another thing too, Nathan, blacks made a difference in only six states in 2008. In Indiana, North Carolina, about 13,700 votes. I think Florida, Ohio, and maybe a couple, I can't think of the name of them. Black population is not like it used to be. These other ethnic groups, Hispanics, quote unquote, whoever they are, the Asians, who are up about 19 million now. Black vote on a national level is not going to be instrumental like it would not in a primary, yes, because it's a different reason. But when you come down to the general election, black votes is not going to be as instrumental as it used to be when they got John F. Kennedy elected by delivering the vote of the South.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I was just kind of piggybacking off of what he was saying, is that when I was watching the poll here recently, and I try not to filter within the polls because we also understand the uncertainty that could be misleading. But is that where we stand right now as black people, as black voters, is that our vote is really going to determine this election. It's where we're standing now, and we're not showing up. The reason why it is a close margin is because African-American black people are not showing up at the polls.
The
six states,
and,
the eight
and,
states.
And Bianca, you heard me say this on Roger's show, where I said, my conviction is that and I use the word so-called because they are no longer the minority, the so-called minority, in my opinion, would decide this election. I strongly believe that. And when I say the minority, actually, Pianki, you just gave us some statistics here. You've mentioned, I didn't even realize the Asian community had grown so much. And I heard the news report about the Clinton campaign deliberately making some inroads towards the Asian community. Help me understand here, Kim, you can respond to this. So are you telling me that the black community's population hasn't grown that exponentially over the years?
So I think this question's for someone else, not necessarily for me, because I'm not the population
Anybody
person.
Anybody can respond.
Well, no, it has black black community, black population took a major hit to that 1973 Roe versus Wade decision.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not attacking any women. I'm not attacking any women. But when you take out approximately 18 million of your population, well, that's going to affect you at some place down the line.
Are we saying Roe versus Wade is the reason why black people aren't getting out to vote? We don't have the population?
No. Well, you can get out to vote, but if you had 60 million, your vote would mean a whole lot more difference. During Obama's administration, you had approximately 16 million blacks that voted out of 24 that were potentially eligible to vote. 24 million potentially eligible to vote. You had 16 million, a little bit over 16 million that came out and voted in 2008 in that election, no matter which way that they voted. So when you have we're seeing it with the school closing in our cities. In St. Louis, they closed 38 schools. St. Louis Public School District is down about 25,000 students, whereas I remember when it was much over 100,000. So
you're talking
about
a population decrease, not because of abortions, but because people aren't having as many children as they once had. Now, I'll go with the lady that talked about the increase in the prison population as one of the reasons why we don't have the voting population, because I think that's accurate. When you're talking about people not having babies in terms of abortion and Roe versus Wade, I totally disagree with that. The idea that we don't have the voting population because they've been incarcerated is a better idea than saying because we're doing a high number of abortions. I disagree.
Well, how many have you got incarcerated? Total incarceration in the United States is what, about 1.9 million? That's nowhere compared to the other.
Currently the population of our jail system for black people is 2.3 million. Currently, and then when you take that and you take that in consideration, if you want to piggy off abortions, first of all, African American is not the highest rate of abortion. It's our counters, our ethnics, our white people who really indulge in abortions because it was made for them. But when it got to a point when it came political, then now they want to go pro-life, but you don't want to protect life when it comes out. So if you got to make your decision now, are you going to be pro-life or are you going to protect life? Because if you want to tell me what I can do with my body as a woman, but then you don't want to protect my son or my daughter when they come out, then what's the distinction? Because you're going to lock them up, then they can't vote anyway.
I think the abortion debate is all separate, nothing from today's discussion.
We're not debating the abortion.
The reason abortion has come in here is Pianchi, you mentioned Roe versus Wade, and I don't know what you meant to say when you just clarify what you meant to say when you brought in Roe versus Wade. I was going to ask you.
No, as he clarifies that, he should also explain how the voters in 2012 and 8 went to the polls, they showed up, but now half of them, I don't know either they have died of abortion or what has happened to them. They are not showing
exactly.
up this year. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Bianchi, you want to address that?
Well, mm-hmm. I said, I would have went on and also mentioned the prison population because they disfranchised. See, the federal government cannot tell states how to run their voter qualification. States are sovereign when it comes to that. They can tell states when you are violating a U.S. citizen's civil rights when it comes to vote. But if states want to disfranchise you after you got out of prison, they got a right to do that.
Okay. Let's leave that alone. There are issues here. Everybody listening, wherever you are, Europe, Asia, you're listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. Our discussion today is about America decides 2016, and we are looking at the significance of the minority vote, specifically the African American. The reason we're having this discussion today is from the beginning of this campaign, we've heard insinuations, statements from the campaign platform to say
the black vote needs to be motivated, needs to be driven, needs to be, they need to come out there. So this is what we are trying to get from our colleagues who live in these different communities, Kitra in Texas, Pianke in Missouri, and Ms. Kimberly in Florida, different places here we are looking at. I will bring in my colleagues here, the regular listeners, whatever contributions or comments you may want to make, looking into these situations as people who have come to live in this community and this great country. One of Pianke has raised the issue of disfranchising the black vote. There is evidence. This thing has even gone to court. The judge issued an injunction, I don't know if that's the right word, against the Trump campaign not to put their people at voting centers because it's going to intimidate voters. There are a lot of things that affect the black vote, African-American vote. Living in communities, I know an area here where I am, Kitra, I can tell you there's an area here in Texas where it is predominantly black. There is no close voting place during the early voting, no close place. On top of that, Ms. Kim, there's no public transportation. Let's address this subject now as we go in that direction, Roger and everybody calling in here. To what extent do we see those things at play in trying to get the black vote not participate, the black community?
Well, that's by design. So you're talking about a lot of states where there's Republican governors, there are Republican congressmen,
right,
Republican senators. And when you mm-hmm. gerrymander the districts, which is what they typically do after their party takes over a majority for our government, their desire is to ensure that the vote reflects the largest, their population, which is the Republican,
right,
the Republican vote. So it's by design that they do these things. So initially, when you have these Republican governors creating or their administrations creating these voter suppression activities, it was because it was a reflection of what happened to ensure that those people that came out to vote during the Obama voting regime don't have the opportunity to do those things again. So it's not brand new. It's happened before. And when you're talking about, you know, voter suppression at the polls, I mean, that happened in the South. I mean, this is why they put in place measures to prevent voter intimidation during the civil rights time, because they had people like AKK coming up and ensuring that if you came to vote, your family was going to be attacked, or you were going to have issues,
right,
afterwards. This isn't brand new. I mean, this is something that has been done and is continuing to be done in areas where they know that they can intimidate the voters.
Okay.
Well, Poll Watchers is a state entity. If you want to, states have rules and regulations on what poll watchers can do and what where they can be applied. When it comes down to redistricting, the committee that sits down at the redistricting table are equally represented by representatives from both parties. If it's a Republican mayor, you still have to have an equal number of Democrats that's sitting at the table, state legislature, an equal number of Republicans that's sitting at the table that agree to this is where we want this district to lie. And many times they would try to draw districts up to encompass their particular ethnic groups. Blacks try to draw a district that's going to encompass as many blacks as they possibly can. Whites do the same thing. They come down to some compromise in order to make sure that you have at least 30,000 of people in each district as it is spelled out by the U.S. Constitution.
Why do the redistricting, why not just leave things the way they are? Well, it raises a lot of suspicion, Pianke, don't you think so? Especially,
no, because
you know,
the Constitution required that each district be apportioned according to the number of people. So for a long time, I don't know if it's still 30,000, but it's spelled out in the Constitution how many people can reside in a district. That's how you go about creating the number of representatives that you have. Some states have more congressional representatives than other states. That's because of the population.
Okay.
All right. This has been a very contentious issue. And like Ms. Kim said, you notice that in places where you have Republican governors, they tend to push some of these things so hard. And it raises suspicion that the target group is the minority community to suppress, to discourage them or suppress them to coming out to vote and things like that, and all those sorts of things. Where are we heading in this election as far as this thing is concerned? Because you can see that it's almost the same thing, Pianki, whether, I don't know, it's almost the same thing like what was happening with the KKK, you know, that time when they were trying to say they are watching how you're voting and your family will be killed. And the court issued an injunction against the Trump campaign from doing that. Don't you think that in a normal situation, it's intimidating? And I'm going to ask Matilda to share an experience that she had that she attended the rally. She will talk about that. I don't know. I mean, Kitra, don't you think that it amounts to that when you have people standing at a polling booth and posing in a certain way or presenting themselves in a certain way?
Yes, I just kind of give it in a short version so the other speaker can move forward. But I believe, and it goes down to two words, and I've already mentioned those words. Those words are superiority and inferiority. And I believe that the reason why is that as some communities with some African Americans, because culturally we have been oppressed to a inferior mindset. So therefore, if you're showing up at the polls and you're not feeling confident because you're just comfortable in who you are, then you're easy to fall subject to the superiority that you see. And therefore, you will not take the president to say, well, I'm here and I'm going to bring 100 other people like me to vote. So therefore, you create this hierarchy. And unfortunately, white America has always had that stance in America. And therefore, we can't find our way to come out of that niche. And when I look at this election and I'm thinking about everything that I'm sitting here listening to, there has been a lot of things, whether you poll where you're going to have your elections and whether you do these things. But I personally feel like if you're sitting at the table, whether you're a Democrat or you're Republican, and you're opting to poll and I'm going to speak from a Texas perspective, South Dallas, where there's predominantly black people, and then you're going to also petition to poll in Plano, where there's predominantly white people. Well, and you're going to have the poll in North Dallas for early voting, then why you're not providing transportation for the people in South Dallas at the table to get to the poll? And I think that's the disconnect, because there's not an interest for us to get to the poll. It's those that they want to get to the poll based on what they know they're going to vote for. And that's my position.
Well, church groups take people to the polls. You have organizations that take people to the polls by buffalo. If you
and I'm not
poll,
talking about the church. My husband is a pastor. I'm a wife of a pastor.
I'm so talking about where I live.
I mean, I don't think it's. I don't think.
I don't live in Texas.
On,
I live here in Missouri in the St. Louis area. So I can only comment where I'm staying. But church groups, other organizations, take people to the poll by the busload. Some folks, even if they, it's a real personal election, they bring them to the poll by automobile. A poll watcher, you can be a poll. You can challenge someone. Say someone that you know don't live in that polling place, in that precinct. You can challenge them yourself. Anyone can challenge someone that's at the polling place. You can bring the issue.
Let me give you an example. I'm going to give you a very just very simple example based on two different schools as an educator I've worked in. Currently, I worked in a school in a predominantly African-American place where we really took voting for our next generation. That means the 18-year-olds, will be 18 on election day. So this is during the President Obama's regime, right? So therefore, they did what they call stroll to the poll. They made sure that every African-American or American in the church, whether you black me in the school, whether you're black, you're white, you're Hispanic, you're Asian, you're whatever, if you're going to be 18 before the cutoff date in October, then you can register to vote on election, doing early polling, we're going to do a stroll to the poll. Well, I took that same concept to where I am currently to say, went to the student council and said, well, what are you doing to capture this the next generation of both voters, predominantly white community? Well, I don't know. I've never thought about doing anything like that. But you work in a black school, all black school, in this community where all the kids that are African-American or minorities attend, and you never considered that their vote matters. If you would do something to encourage them to get to the polls, because maybe generationally their parents didn't vote, right? Maybe generationally they wouldn't push because of the superiority-inferiority aspect. But I think those are the things that I'm saying is that I understand what you're saying, whether you're in Missouri, where you're in Florida, where you're at, and in Texas. I get it. But as a race of people, there has to be some level of accountability for who we are. And when we don't take that stand to do whatever we can and not depend on the church, not depend on those. Yes, the church is going to do with those things, especially in black communities. Yes. And we're going to have our black leaders to do what they're going to do. Yes, we're going to do that. Hopefully they do the right thing and don't, you know, don't sway or don't be swayed. But my thing is that we have to take accountability, and we have to be willing to go against the grain, and are we?
Well, you know, that accountability Pardon me?
You finish off, Bianchi, and then I'll go to Matilda.
Well, that accountability lie in what's going on in your school. The community control that school board. It's what that community wants that the school board should execute. Another thing. Getting people, getting your black children to go to the poll just to vote is one thing, but they should know what they're voting about. They should be able to understand and critique the issues. And for instance, on your judges, you have these circuit judges, you have these associate judges. They should be able to go, they should go in and check the record and see how these judges rule, how they perform in their courtroom. The same thing on issues, on propositions, tax issues. So that's lacking. Just getting them to go. See, in communities that I see around here, there's intimidation that goes on in all black communities. When a potential voter is walking toward the entrance, he or she may have the information in their hand. Somebody on that poll is going to be snatching things out of their hand, putting their ballot in their hand, and telling them to vote straight Democrat. A vote straight Republican or whatever. So that's intimidation also.
In the booth, Bianchi, where is this happening? At what stage does this happen?
Now, as you're walking up to go into the door, you know, you can only electioneer 20 feet from the polling entrance, So you have electioneers out there that's accosting voters as they come to, and they're barraging them with flyers and already pre-printed out ballots on how some group want to see this particular slate to be elected. And that goes on. That type of intimidation does go on.
Okay.
And that also
Matilda,
goes on here in Texas as well.
Matilda, you wanted to share your experience, or you wanted to say something, and then I'll go to Carrie, then allow our regular contributors also to make their contribution based on their observations, their experiences. I know some of us have even voted and things like that. Go ahead, Matilda, share your experience and just what you wanted to say.
All right. Thank you, Nathan. Hello, everyone. I know earlier you had called on me to share my experience when I had attended the Trump rally. Well, I only attended it for a very short time and I left. But there's something that Bianchi said just now that I want to comment on, and it's key, when he talked about the judges. A lot of times when we are voting, especially in our local areas and so on, we're asked if we want certain judges to stay, and a lot of times we don't know them. But one thing, an advantage that I've had being at home these last few months and so on, I'm able to watch what's going on here in Florida. So sometimes I watch what's going on currently as the judges are making their ruling. I also watch some of the city council meetings that are televised on TV, and I've had privileges to attend some of these things. But I just wanted to make a comment. Not everyone knows that they can observe their judges in action without actually going to court. But the quick experience I wanted to share was I went to a job fair that was in the same area as the Trump rally. And I called Kim, and I also called you, Nathan, and it was one of those things that I felt eerie. I felt I shouldn't feel like that. I mean, I've lived in Missouri, Pianke. We know Missouri. There's some places where you go to and just feel like, I should not be here. But this was like two or three times worse, you know, that kind of feeling, like, oh my goodness, I felt, not that they were going to attack me or kill me or anything, but just there's a sense, there was an eerie feeling in the air of just being in this presence as they were getting ready for the campaign and Trump came on and spoke for a little bit. I decided to leave, but it was just one of those things that if whoever wins, if that crowd
what do you think made you feel like that? What would you attribute or allude to?
It's not something tangible that I can put my finger on.
I know.
I'll come back. Let me think about it. I'll come back and say.
Right.
Go ahead.
I attended Trump rally here in St. Louis, and I didn't have no rope burns on my neck. We had blacks who was in the parading back and forth, open carrying their weapons on their side. And Black Panthers was in another group here, an event here where they open carried their AK-47s, AK-15s, whatever they have. So, I mean, that's just they got a right to do that. People came, we talked, and so on and so on.
It was a different thing. It's not something that you see often. Like you said, and Pianke, I know you've been around for a long time. I'm nowhere close.
Well, I know what you mean. I understand what you're saying.
Right.
Okay, let's go to Miss. Let's go to Carrie. Carrie, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. How are you?
I've been trying to call on you for a while. I understand. What did you want to say? Please, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to comment on this particular election. I did do grassroots for both the 2008 and 2012 Obama campaign because there was a different feel in the air that, you know, we really needed to get out and get the black vote out there. And as far as this election, I feel that we as a people just kind of felt that no one wants Trump in office, so who's going to vote for Trump? So I kind of think the people just kind of shied away from doing what we needed to do to really get the vote out there. I, for one, can say that I didn't do grassroots, mainly because my father is critically ill, so I was flying back and forth to my home state of Arkansas a lot.
Okay.
Care for him, but
sorry to hear that.
I think we automatically thought that Trump didn't have a chance in a bird's nest, but so we didn't get out there like we should have to get the vote out, and it could turn out to be very badly.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we're gonna end this discussion with one very critical point here. Dr. Kalonde, you've heard what Carrier said, that everybody thought that Trump didn't have a chance. Now, everybody get ready. I'm coming to you, and I want you to...
Now, everybody did now. Clarify that.
Yeah, everybody's in now. I'll still end with my panel. Dr. Kalonde, you've heard what Carrier said. Everybody thought Trump didn't have a chance, so they just relaxed and said, this is going to be an easy ride for Clinton. Why do you think people had that mindset, Dr. Kalonde?
I'll start with the two things that one of your panelists have mentioned. We have talked about let me talk about just the black voter being to go vote, and also the numbers going down as compared with the Barack Obama when he was campaigning. There are a few things that have made a difference. Barack Obama got into office 2008 and he started working. And the working he did. Now, the black community, which I belong to, sorry, I'm black guys, I'm a professor in Montana, I'm the only black mm-hmm. professor at Montana State University. Now, this is the situation. Obama has worked, I don't know if I'm going to use the A word, he has worked his behind off.
Yeah.
And he has changed the country from where it was to where it is supposed to be momentarily. Now, here is a situation that Obama faces. Obama cannot go and solely put everything in our community. And moreover, we know what Obama has faced for the past 8 years. It was gridlock, roadblock, everything that they can throw in front of him. So here the challenge, and the challenge was so insurmountable. So that one aside, so Obama did not neglect our community. He tried, mm-hmm. but he couldn't do more because he was alone fighting or trying to move a mountain. One. Two, we ask ourselves as black people, are we better off in the hands of Trump or are we better off in the hands of Hillary? Or are we better off in the hands of Republicans or are we better off in the hands of Democrats? We know all these groups, they have their own failures. But there is one
yes.
group that tries a bit. Now, does our staying home without going to participate help us or really makes us suffer more in the future?
That's right.
Those are the things we should look at and ask. Now, in terms of our participation is cardinal in every election because even one vote makes a difference. And we cannot give up this thing that people died for. People died for this thing called voting. People were hiding in the bushes because of being tortured or being killed over voting. So when we have a right like today, what do we do? Now, coming to my brother, Pianchi, we know Pianchi is a Republican or he supports Trump, which is very good. Everybody supports or chooses who to support.
Right.
But with this idea of monitoring or trying to intimidate people at the polls, it goes against the civil rights of everybody. I have a right to go and campaign. They've given us a right to go and campaign 20 meters or 20 feet or 20 yards away from the polling station. If I'm handing out papers for people to go and vote, that is not voter intimidation.
Mm.
That is voter campaigning or suggestion. Intimidation is when you go and have bikers pack their bikes, you know, these are people who have everything, and you say, okay, it's open carry. You cannot do open carry at the polling station, and you don't think of that as intimidation. It's a dangerous
okay.
trend that has been brought up by their candidates, and whereby, like what Mama Tilda said, sometimes you could even fear watching it on TV, not being there. Just watching it on TV, you start feeling scared. What about going there? I don't think it was 3 times Ramatilda. It must have been 50 times more dangerous.
Okay. Let me bring in somebody else here. Thank you for those points. Alan, who's also in Florida, you've heard what Dr. Kalonda said. He has a phrase that he has come up with. Are we better off in the hands of...
Hello.
Oh, by the way, mm-hmm. by the way, Dr. Kalonda is the one who gave away your position, Pianchi. It wasn't me. You noticed that I wanted to keep everybody.
Well, he's wrong in that. But I'll straighten him out in a minute when they come back around.
Okay, I know you're back in a minute. I want to go to Alan.
Us Tongo men always do.
As Trump people always do. That's a joke.
Oh, God bless them.
Are we better off in the hands of... Okay, I want you to address that question, Pastor Alan. You can come from whichever angle you want, based on what you have heard on the discussion, but I want you to start from this point. Dr. Kalonde says we need to ask ourselves the question as black people, are we better off in the hands of, you can complete the statement.
You know what, for me, it's always been that there are things that I agree with the Republicans and Democrats. So are we better off? The trouble I have with Republicans is, even when they have the correct answer, the way the answer is presented just comes off wrong and just rubs you wrong. Even when what they are saying, what they are prescribing, is actually going to be helpful, or it's better than what the Democrats are prescribing. So, and that's the biggest trouble that I have with the Republicans. At the same time,
okay,
Democrats, some of the things that they perpetuate, I know in the long term, they are not good for even this, when you begin to look at the whole idea of welfare and how it's administered and all that, I don't really agree so much with the Democrat position. There are other social issues or moral issues, things like abortion and stuff like that, that I don't agree with the Democrats. So are we better off? Here's my take on any elections in the USA. The president of the USA does not have ultimate power like African presidents. You do well to elect, if you are Republicans, you're better off having in the either one of the houses. You make sure you control one of them. If the Democrats control one of the houses and the Republicans control the other, there's a lot more room for compromise because each side is trying to get at least something done.
Mm-hmm.
So if both houses of Congress and the House of Representatives is controlled by one party, that's where you have everything Obama said. So I don't know this one really. at least I'm not a voter, so my headache is limited.
Okay. I hear you.
Can I jump in because I wanted to say that I think there's a 1,000-pound elephant, no pun intended, for Republicans on this call. The biggest issue is that we're talking about, and I'm glad the gentleman raised the idea of the House and the Senate and our congressmen, because our president really has limited power. But you're talking about a system of government who's had the same powers of leadership for at least 30 years. I mean, you have Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell who've had over 30 years of opportunities in their positions. And so when there's no movement, it's because we've had the same people in power for year after year. Our president gets eight years for the most part. Exactly. So the president essentially gets 8 years, but you have all of these other people that are in place and have been in place year after year and decade after decade. So there's no movement with the exception of some of the very limited things that the president can do. So in the last couple of years, you've seen our president with all these executive orders. He's had to do executive orders because we've got gridlock in Washington because of the issues of there's too many people that have been there for too long.
Yes. Now,
well,
Ms. Kim, Pianki, let me ask this question and then I'll come to you. I know you want to respond to one or two things here. Are we saying then that based on that, that notion of people holding on to office for so many years, you've heard Donald Trump says he's going to propose an amendment to the Constitution that there be limited terms also on Congress and on the senators. Is that good?
Yes.
It's not just Congress and senators. You also have administrations that have been there for a long time. So you're talking about, you know, they're bringing up Comey, who's got this issue with FBI. You're talking about people who have been in these positions for a really long period of time. So whatever they've done has been already established. It's not just the people that are elected. It's also the people at the highest levels of administration that have been in their position for more than 30 years, and they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, we come to the point of then we really need the millennials to get involved in this thing and bring about a new way of thinking and a new way of doing business in the country. Pianki, you can respond and then I'll go to
Uncle Daniel Chisebwe, and then Titus, and then we'll conclude our discussion. Yankee,
you know, somebody called me a Republican. I got my ballot here for election date 2008. I'm president, I'm voting for Trump. U.S. Senator Roy Blunt, Republican. For representative, I'm voting for Lacey Clay. He's a Democrat. For governor, I'm voting for Chris Costner. He's a Democrat. For lieutenant governor, I'm voting for a Democrat. He's a Russ Cunningham. He's a Democrat. I know Robin Smith, who's running for Secretary of State, so I was going to vote for him. So I vote. I'm voting for the people. I research who these people are. I have been watching the Clintons for a long, long time. I know them.
Well,
and
you
I would
haven't been
never
watching
vote
Trump
for Hillary Clinton.
You've been in this thing for a long time as well.
Another thing. If we showed this much energy when I'm speaking to get people out to vote, then we wouldn't be in such a peril. At least those are blacks. Well, ma'am, come on now.
Miss Kemp, let him finish and then I'll let you talk. Let him finish.
My goodness.
Go ahead.
You know, we were talking earlier this morning, Roger, Nathan, about and the lady that was speaking in the recording about the Zambian diaspora and what it should do. Well, Black America has a diaspora too. It's called a certain class of African Americans. As blacks move up into another class, their wants, their ideologies change. And the things that you've seen in the Democrats, with most Democrats, not all of them, but a lot of them, does not fit their prescription at that time. So that is, I mean, that is the reality. And also, whites, I'm going to put it like this, Asians are not going to solve blacks' problems. Asians are going to move ahead of blacks. They already have economically. As a matter of fact, they moved ahead of whites economically. Their business is kicking butt. If that is the model that you have to follow. This is the Western model. You have to follow the Western model until you can get to a point where you can make changes your own for your best. And until you get to that point, you're going to be having these problems. Democrats hustle blacks all the time. You just mentioned some politicians that's been all the time. And what when you go into these areas, what do they look like? They look like desolate war zones in many cases at the time.
Oh,
Trump
God.
Mentioned about the
oh,
ghetto.
God.
Blacks that lived in the ghetto. Well, come look at North St. Louis if you don't think it's a war zone. You got buildings that's half fallen down, leaning, burnt out.
Okay. Miss Carey, you wanted to, you were saying something? Go ahead.
Yes.
And those conditions still exist.
And to each his own, whomever they want to vote for, to each his own. I have a brother. My husband is a retired Marine. We have a brother that's a Marine. He's been a Republican all his life, love him to death, have no problem with anyone being a Republican. You choose your own party. My problem with this is I feel that if Trump is going to change how long a person should stay in office in the Congress and in the Senate, how many terms they should serve, and then, you know, four and out or eight and out, just as the president should do, then – I think there should be some type of criteria that should be set in place of who should even be able to run for president. We have a person that hasn't even served as a mayor. He hasn't even served as a dishwasher in the White House. He has served in no form of political aspect whatsoever. He is a great and somewhat businessman because a lot of his businesses has gone bankrupt. But just because he has these ginormous businesses, he can run for president. You or I can run for president. This is something I think that should be looked at and looked at hard. You should have served in some capacity of government either as a senator or a governor for either 4 or 8 years before you can even put your name on a ballot to run for the number one country in the world, to be president of the number one country in the world. How can they let someone like Trump get up there and go for president. And then the Republicans, we have Republicans out there, qualified Republicans, like Mitt Romney. He's very qualified, very qualified. How did all of these qualified Republicans allow Trump to beat them out? I'm just devastated.
I can answer that for you real quick in two questions. Not, one, because the Constitution says so. And the second question is because in the primary, he beat them all. The people say they want him. That's why we are a republic.
I know that you are a republic, but he knows nothing about our foreign policy. He knows nothing. And, I mean, and this guy, of course, best friends with Putin, we won't be a republic for long. We will be communists because he is best friends with Putin.
Hillary made it possible when she was Secretary of State for Russia to be able to extract 20% of uranium in the United States.
Well, at least
what is uranium
used
for?
We need to move on.
And best friends with Putin are two different things. Totally different things.
Well, Armin Hammer was best friend with Khrushchev.
Yankee, I need to allow Daniel to come in here. Miss Kerry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Here's the thing. I have put this argument. Kerry, listen to
me. I'm an Arkansas Razorback.
Okay, let me put this point across. I appreciate the arguments and the points that Kerry has put forward. And I did put this across at a certain point at the beginning of this campaign. Uncle Daniel, get ready to give your comments. We are getting towards the end of the conclusion. Here is my argument about the way this election turned out. First of all, I just want to listen. We need to respect any area of life or career or office or whatever it is, the medical practitioner, the lawyers, a Christian ministry, and things like that. And I've always made this statement, Kitra. I say there are two places or two fields of career in life where people just jump in even when they don't have the credentials. Ministry,
yes.
In church, and secondly, when it comes to the political field, that is wrong. Why do I say that? Politics is a science. And I have never bought into this, excuse my word, I've never bought into this crap of saying an outsider like Ben Carson and Donald Trump were saying they're outsiders. The reason
that's right.
The reason you are not understanding the way like Kerry is saying that you have never held political mayor or whatever, though experience just helps you how things run in elected office. Politics is a science. You can't just jump in. Politics simply means managing people. And if you think you are going to bring that attitude of in your business of saying you are fired into the political field, it's not going to work. This is a place where people need to understand how you relate with people. In a way, I have never seen much difference between holding political office and doing ministry in the work of God. Okay, Uncle Daniel, you want to go ahead with your comment?
I ain't gonna comment on that.
Yes, and thank you, the panelists that joined us today. You guys, you are tremendous, and please join us again. You brought a fresh air to Zambia Broke Talk Radio to inform how you know about your country, and we really appreciate that. That was very good. I mean, thank you, Nathan, to bring this this group and the things that you mentioned about. The way they are trying the prisons because they didn't want the blacks to vote and stuff like that. That's why I'm a fan of books like Jordan Can Read and the black economist. Tom Sawyer. You know, I'm a fan of those guys. But the thing I want to say, are we better off for Clinton or nothing? American people have spoken. Now we have two people. For me, right now, it doesn't matter who's get in office because American people have spoken. We have two people now. You know, the Democrats we started with so many, and Republicans we started so many. Now we are two people, and the last part of this they're just shooting. They're just throwing mud at each other. They're trying to paint Trump so bad and try to paint Clinton so bad. We are two people now. Mm-hmm. Whatever is in the head is going to be our president.
You know.
Excellent. Okay. My final question to my panelists, Ms. Kitra, Ms. Kim, Ms. Vicari, and the Honorable Pianki here. Let me begin with Kitra. There is this statement, and I did mention this to all of you when you were coming on the show, that I wanted us to address this. We have about 10 minutes remaining here. There is this thing, this statement. I try to grasp it into my mind. I can never just get to the bottom of it. Obama hasn't done much for the black people in this country. Help me understand that. Each one of you is going to respond in your own way. Kitra, I'll start with you. What does that mean? I don't know. What is your position on that statement, Kitra?
Well, I guess if I have to look at, again, for my generation, is that they make this statement that he hasn't done anything because they feel like they haven't seen what he's done for them tangibly. And that means that based on some of my colleagues today, I mean, have really brought out a lot of thought-provoking scenarios, is that he can only do what he could do based on what he done. Me and my husband have this debate all the time, is that I feel like, I'm going to take my one scenario and pass the torch, is that when I look at the fact that he says he's morally not correct, morally Obama is too liberal. Well, I asked him, I challenged my husband and said, well, why is it that he has to be morally incorrect? Why is it that the fact that he's telling you he can't tell you what to do with your body? And he has to take a position because he got a whole laundry list of things to fight. So if I say I don't advocate same-sex marriage, I don't. I believe marriage is constitutional, biblically, one woman, one man. Because how can you procreate if you're not, right? However, I can't tell you to marry a woman. I can't tell you to do that because that don't mean I agree with you. But that don't mean I can't tell you what to do. And I think that I feel, in summary, is that we're better off, me, my position. I go with, I guess the slogan, the greater of the two evils, I voted for Hillary. The reason why I voted for Hillary is because Trump has not exhibited to me in his character that he cares generally about the opposite races of who he is. Now, that's what I've seen, and I've watched him too. And that's my position.
Okay, let me quickly go to Kerry. We have 7 minutes here. Ms. Kerry, you heard the question.
Okay.
You wanna...
Oh, hi. And just like Deidre was saying, the blacks are saying that President Obama didn't do enough for the black people. President Obama had to come in and deal with the hand that he was dealt. First of all, he had a mess to undo before he started doing all the great things that he did for this country. So people are now working again. You know, the car industry is booming again. So President Obama did great things for this country. And as far as this election, I am a diehard Democrat. I was born and raised in Arkansas, educated in Arkansas and in Florida. So, you know, just me, just being from the South, born, raised, diehard Democrat. But this year, I was going to vote for America, and which means I was going to vote for the best person for the job, which whether it be Democrat, whether it be Republican, whether it be Independent. That's who I was voting for, America. And I just feel Hillary is the best person for the job. Had it been anyone other than Trump, then I may have been voting Republican. I don't know, but Trump is just not the best person for the job. And that's my answer.
All right, thank you. Pianki?
You're welcome.
Well, you know, I do my research, have been following these people. I have very strong interest in Africa. I don't like the way Hillary went to African country dangling a carrot of aid, saying if you want this aid, you got to do this. Open up your society to things that's against your tradition. I have Haitian friends. Haitians were protesting against Hillary Clinton's office because of the things that went on after the earthquake, and they still are teed off about those things. I know how she have established this foundation that contributed to the very things that I hear blacks complain about all the time. Planned Hood International, and also your local Planned Hood that creates these abortions in your community. I know what she has done with this pay-to-play, how she has influenced leaders around the world. If they pay and contribute to her foundation, then they get what they want. She was behind and she was supportive of India getting a nuclear weapon, even though in the nuclear proliferation treaty, she was for that to keep other nations from getting nuclear weapons. She's a witch. She's one of three that I can name. Hillary Clinton, Susan Rice, and Samantha Powell.
Okay. That's Mr. Pianki's position. And finally, Ms. Kim, you get the final word on responding to the question, and you can also just wrap up our discussion.
Sure. So let me just say, I actually am a registered Republican, and I voted for Bush. And part of the reason why I voted for Bush was because of his efforts in Africa. So I really understand what people have done across the board in terms of their activity and in terms of their activism. You know, my grandfather just passed this spring. He was 99 years old. He lived in the Deep South. He was truly disenfranchised. I remember growing up how he talked about not being able to vote and how the Monday after voting and registrations, he would go and there would be bodies in the river of people that actually tried to vote. He also was born during a time where women were disenfranchised and they weren't able to vote as well. And so he talked about what that felt like. He talked about what that looked like. And I think to grow up in a generation of people that are careless with how they perceive their vote and how they perceive people in positions with the power to be able to make changes, I think it's something that, you know, in terms of my mind, I can't even wrap my arms around. President Obama wasn't just a black president. He is the president of the United States. And I think when you look at the people's perception of what the president should do for the black community and what the president should do for any community, he's not Christ. He wasn't put on this – he's not put on this planet to change the heart of people. He really was here to make a difference in an office. And when you look at his policies made a difference in the office. It wasn't to restore the people. And I think it was really – in terms of his presidency, it was more about him being an American with the opportunity to pursue a vision to become president of the United States as a black man, where when you look at the nation and how far our nation has become or how far our nation has come, that opportunity superseded his race. And I think people had an opportunity to see themselves in a president or see themselves in a man who pursued the highest office in the land, whether he was black, white, Indian, or indifferent. It showed that anybody could take this office. Anybody had an opportunity to pursue a dream if they desired to pursue that dream.
Excellent. Ms. Kimberly Jones, Kitra Davenport Jones, Kerry Boone, and Pianki, I do thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts, your experience, and the history of this great country. I will tell you this as a Christian. The Bible tells me that there is no authority except that which comes from God. Our responsibility as people, as children of God, whoever will be elected on Tuesday, we need to pray and find a way to support them. I do thank everybody for joining us and have a great weekend.
Amen. You too. Thanks, Nathan.
Yeah.